So, the radiant glory of God will be revealed. Thank God, because there's some people out there that need to learn about the radiant glory of God. Right? There's people out there who are not hip to the program, and they are stealing my peace. They are frustrating me endlessly. I need them to wake up and get with it. Are you feeling that? Are you feeling that? God, all I hear is people feeling that. All of, and they're both looking at each other like, you need the radiant glory of God. Oh no, you need the radiant glory of God. Let me tell you. It's like, whoa, man. It's like everybody is right. Everybody is right. You know that's not true. The place I see this work out most is around these issues of peace, right? That, well, you know what? If other people would get right with Jesus, right, then it'd be okay. If the world was just safer, if people were kinder and like more trusting and more open, then I could be my full, true, delightful self. But as long as people are going to be a bunch of blankety blank blank, etc., then I'm not going to play. I'm going to take my toys and I'm going to go home. Right? If only other people would have the peace of God, then I would get to have the peace of God. Do you see how nonsensical that is? Just like completely insane. Because then our ability to be in touch with God actually requires everybody else to have their stuff figured out to our standard, instead of us having our stuff figured out to our standard. And this whole narrative about how if the world were safer, then I'd be able to be my true and vulnerable self is a direct opposite of the way that that works. Do you know how the world becomes safer? Is people become more willing to be vulnerable. Right? That it becomes the norm to be honest and authentic and humble and forgiving and confessional. Like when you screw up and you get called out on it, when it's the norm to be like, yeah, I did. Whoa, buddy, I screwed that one up. Instead of, well, let me pick apart your argument until I find the one little word that you use that's not accurate, and then I stand really firmly on that one little word and fight you on this because I'm not willing to admit that I screwed up. I screwed a lattice to my neighbor's garage. I didn't ask permission. I screwed that one up. I thought, oh, they'll never notice. They're going to sell the house anyway. And while I was at work the other day, the guy almost called the cops on me. And so I called his daughter because he is, I believe he's Cambodian, and his English isn't great, and my Cambodian is non-existent. So I called his daughter, and she started out, well, that is my property, right? And I was like, all right, who am I going to be in this moment? And I decided to just full-on go with, yep, totally screwed up, should have asked your permission, I didn't do it, put all my cards on the table, I'll take it down tomorrow when I get home. And for the first time in a long time, I remember like watching this wave of frustration like grow, and then you just cut the bottom out of it. And then the rest of our conversation was great. And then she was talking to me how hard it is to work with her dad because he's an older guy and he's very set in his ways and she has a hard time, etc. And now we're on the same team. And I just thought, man, I should admit that I'm screwing stuff up a lot more often. No, I really mean that. I should admit that I'm screwing stuff up a lot more often because that's actually more accurate. And that what if maybe instead of posturing for security and posturing for control and posturing for being right all the time, it just became the norm to be like, hey, what's up? I screwed that up. How you doing? Hey, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm trying and it's not working. What are you having for lunch? And that maybe then posturing for security and control would become the antisocial behavior, the awkward thing that we don't know how to manage, right? Because right now it's really hard when people are honest because we're like, oh, I need to comfort you and tell you that you didn't screw it up and that everything's okay, but actually it's not. Like, you really did screw that up. And can we talk about that in a way that doesn't lead to judgment, that doesn't lead to condemnation? Can we just say, yep, that's a total mess, and it's got your handprints all over it. Now what are we going to do? So this is what John is all about. This is what he's doing out there in the wilderness. Right? He had the opportunity to be a priest. He was the son of Zacharias, who's in the temple. He could have been a priest too, and he could have been doing all of that work where people come and they do their offerings, and he blesses their offerings and distributes the resources and gives people the official sanction and pardon that the institution can offer. But he was like, man, I see people show up and I see them be guarded and be safe and do it right, and be focused on doing it right. Nah. I want people to get naked in public. Right? I want people to have to show up while everybody's watching and need forgiveness. I'll give it to them. Oh yeah. We'll all get wet down here, but I need people to show up that way first. Naked, vulnerable, visible, and willing to receive blessing. Willing to acknowledge publicly that they need washing. How radical an idea is that? I need people to show up and say, I have failed and I am not a failure. You're not going to walk out of here, John says. You're not going to walk out of here with your head low. You're not going to walk out of here a slippery and wet failure. You're going to walk out of here cleansed and refreshed. Because you're going to have shown up and said, yep, that's me. But yep, that's God. Not even a but. Yep, that's me. And yes, that's God. It's got to be an and. It can't be a but, because the existence of God does not negate us. The existence of perfection and wholeness and completeness and truth does not negate our incompleteness, our brokenness, our trauma, our pain, our fear, our doubt. Hopefully it will disrupt our shame, but it does not remove our lack of wholeness. Hopefully it complements it. So this is what co-creation really means. When we talk about God and people co-creating, it's inherently a repentant posture. Because it says, I am, and this is, and the world is how it is. It's not a fiction. It's not a fantasy. This isn't pretend. This is real. And it's messy. And I am. And I need God. We show up incomplete. Those are two things that happen simultaneously when we're talking about co-creating with God. We show up incomplete. Now, how many times do you not show up because you are incomplete? How many times do you not show up because you don't have it figured out, and you don't know how it works, and you don't know what to do, and you're pretty sure that you're gonna screw it up, so let's stay home. I want to be surrounded by a whole bunch of people just screwing it up constantly. I really do. I want to be around a whole bunch of people that are messy, that are just like, just totally making a mess of everything. Because you know what that means? It means that they're trying and they're unafraid. Now, when you start So I have a toddler, right? He's all about this. And you're like, whiteboard, whiteboard markers, what can go wrong? Right? And he starts, and he's on the thing. And you're like, yeah, this is working. Get him a new pen. Get the old pen out of there. And then he's like, what does it feel like? Then he's like, what does it taste like? And then he's like, what does it look like over here? And so you get a real good sense of how much desire you have for control and how there are boundaries. But at the end of the day, man, if that gets some marker on it, so what? Now, we're not going to keep doing that, right? But I just encounter how easy it is to be afraid of things going wrong. How easy it is to be afraid of things going wrong. And how little consequence there really is when things go wrong. Right? It's like the fear is so huge. And then when it actually happens, it's like, oh. Or like when somebody finds out that it went wrong. Right? Like, oh, my in-laws are coming over and they might see the marker on the carpet. And of course they're going to see it. And they're going to say, well, yeah, you gave him markers, didn't you? And I'm going to say, you're right, I did give him markers, because markers are awesome. I just didn't pay attention for that 30 seconds, because I was trying to do some email real quick. And they're like, yep, that happens. And I'm like, yes, it does happen. What am I going to do? I'm going to put my phone away. Right? No shame, just screwing stuff up in public. What if the world was like that? What if we could just screw stuff up in public all the time? This whole being secure thing, man, it's stealing my peace. Stealing my peace. You know this word, peace in Hebrew, the word is shalom. But shalom doesn't just mean peace. It's got these connotations of harmony and wholeness. The sense of tranquility is also part of it. The sense of completeness, right? And this is what the word is when we talk about the end of the world. When we talk about the second coming, it's not the end of the world. The word in Greek is the telos, the completeness. Paul talks about this in 1 Corinthians when he says, at some point the partial shall pass away. When the completeness comes, the partial shall pass away. Right? But we live in a world of incompleteness. We live in bodies, we have identities that are inherently incomplete. The promise of peace is the promise that our incompleteness might be fit together into some kind of whole. But the anxiety that we have in the world is encountering exactly where we're incomplete, encountering exactly where there are pieces missing, exactly where we are not whole. And sometimes we try to do all kinds of weird, goofy stuff to either completely hide that fact or absolve ourselves of worrying about it or distract ourselves from reality. I've been in a couple good, really good arguments lately. Have you been in really good arguments? You know those arguments where you fundamentally disagree with somebody but you're still respectful, but occasionally you like straight get out of your chair. Nope! That is incorrect. I will not sit here and let you make that presupposition. And they're like, tell me why. And then you get to actually say it, right? You don't just like curse each other out all the time. I've been in some really good arguments lately. And one of the really good ones, I was just like, man, you are making truth claims that I just cannot. Well, so I'll just give you a little bit. So I'm talking to this guy, and he keeps talking about how we can get beyond sexism. He was trying to tell me that there's no wage gap. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh no, there's research to suggest it. And I'm like, okay, so let's talk for a second about research. Like, sure, there's a study that shows everything. There's a study that shows that my skin is blue, right? Like, it just depends on which metrics you use and how finely you tune your study to get you to say what you want. Let's talk about research. And ultimately, let's talk about truth. how are we going to agree on what is the truth? And so we got to the end of this argument. I mean, I really disagreed with them about these things. And at the end of it, I was like, we need to get together again. And when we get together again, we need to start with, what are our core assumptions about truth? And let's have that conversation. Because if we don't have that conversation, we can't have all these other conversations are stacked on top of stuff that we just inherently disagree about. I don't know if this is your jam, but this was like super fun for me. My wife is there with this guy's wife, and they're both looking at each other like, they're going to start hurting each other in a minute. And then she said three times when he left, you guys had fun, right? Like, this was good, right? And we're like, oh yeah, no, this is great. We barely ever get to do this. And she's like, really? This is fun. Maybe next time we'll go out and you guys can do this. But anyway, what if the most secure and foundational and unshakable truth is that we will always have an incomplete grasp of the truth? What if the thing you could be most certain about, in fact, the only thing you could be certain about, is that you really can't be certain about anything? Could you have peace inside of that belief? I see some nods and some shakes, which is good. Maybe we'll talk about it later. What would it mean to have peace inside of a certainty, uncertainty? Well, this is where faith comes in. This is where trust in God at work comes in. Because I can't find a way around uncertainty. I can't find a way around incompleteness. There is no shortcut and there's no long road. There just is incompleteness. And there is something, there is some kind of look at God, some kind of showing up, some kind of power, some kind of transformation that happens when I start with my incompleteness and I say, I am incomplete. I am incapable of doing this yet. And God says, well, let's mix it up a little. But when I start with, I got this, God has to throw a brick through the window instead of knock on the door. You know what I'm saying? Because the door is locked and I ain't answering it. We have to have the boldness to risk in our incompleteness. We have to have the boldness to say, you know what? I don't know everything, and I'm never gonna, but I know this, and I'm gonna show up in this way, and I am going to be critiqued for it. It's going to be incomplete. Everything I could ever possibly say about race or gender or class or truth or justice or mercy or kindness or love or peace or patience, everything I could ever possibly say is going to be incomplete. I was having another conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and we were talking about love and relationships. And he started saying something, and he started apologizing because he knew we had different opinions about this, and I was like, hold up. From this moment forward, we are going to assume that each of us is talking from our own perspective, and when we make truth claims, we will assume that they are our own personal truth claims, and they are not a condemnation of the other person. Agreed? Agreed. And then we had this beautiful conversation. We have to waste time coming back around to, well, I know that you think differently about this, but my opinion happened. You know all that couching language we just said? I'm going to have a thought and a feeling, and I'm going to share it with you. And it's not a judgment on you if you disagree with me, because all of us are incomplete. And it's only by our incompleteness encountering the incompleteness of others that we get a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. But if we pretend that we're not incomplete, then we don't ever have to add anything, right? If your Lego doesn't have any little knobs on it, it cannot interact with other Legos. Right? A Lego is inherently incomplete. It's got holes in the bottom and knobs on the top, and it is designed to be built with other stuff. If your Lego is complete, it is smooth and useless. It is helpful and effective as a torture implement tossed on a floor. But other than that, it is useless. Our incompleteness is a blessing. So the call is to be bold enough to offer our incompleteness in the world and be willing to receive feedback which might give us just a little bit more. And our peace will come when we realize that when we show up incomplete, we didn't die. It wasn't the end of the world. It's still just as incomplete as it was a minute ago. And we realize that in that space of being incomplete, we can authentically encounter God. Amen.